Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, our neighbor, award-winning writer Marjorie Hudson's new book, Accidental Birds of the Carolinas, stories about newcomers and natives and the healing power of the rural South, is just out. And she's all around talking about her book. Look at our webpage and her webpage. We'll have a link to you. Hers is marjoriehudson.com for the times when you can come to visit her and listen to her read. But I want to talk to her about her new book. Marjorie Hudson, welcome.
Hi, thank you, DJ.
Well, you like to write about, you like to write all kinds of things, but nonfiction and your classic book about Virginia Dare haunts me.
Thank you.
It was a blend of fiction and nonfiction.
It was. I kind of got away with something there.
Your new book is stories which are loosely, that's not fair, they are about our area. And although it's not about Chatham County, about people in Chatham County, there's a county a lot like Chatham County where these characters sit.
That's right.
But maybe my favorite story is not about, it might be set in Chatham County, might well be set in Chatham County, but we don't know for sure because it's about one of the most famous North Carolina-related people ever and an important sort of first starting point for North Carolina history, and that's John Lawson.
Yes.
And this is sort of a special outlier story in your book, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a really different story. It's kind of the centerpiece story, and I figured it held the other stories together and gave them a grounding in history.
Tell us about John Lawson. Before you tell us the story, the story which is indirectly about him.
Yeah, John Lawson. He was one of the first explorers to North Carolina and South Carolina in the early 1700s and 1701. He came here rather than going to Rome to go for the millennium, which, you know, where you walk through the gates and see the Pope. So this was a big adventure for a young man, and he traveled what he called a 1,000-mile journey along the Indian trading paths in North and South Carolina and documented 20 nations of Native people who are mostly now gone, but I maintain still here.
Still here in
and
spirit.
In spirit and in descendancy.
Roughly a little after 1700.
Yeah.
When North Carolina was untouched by the Europeans except
very
on the coast.
Young. Except for, the Virginia Dare escapade about 100 years before.
Yeah.
So he became, he wrote a book, and there was a big celebration at UNC Press. They have kept it in print. He wrote a book called Journey of 1,000 Miles, and it was his adventures, and it was so beautifully written, so funny. It's his personal tale, and his also his kind of astonishing vision of how English people could live in peace with Native people, and how much he loved and revered and also thought they were really funny, all these different Native peoples. And he was so enamored of them, it showed. And one of the guides that he had was named Eno Will, and this is the true part of the story that I based the fiction on. Eno Will took him along a section of the Sissipaha River and so on. And
is our Haw River?
It is, I think, our Haw River, okay. Yes. And there was an area, it was called the Land Between Three Rivers, and it was kind of near, you know, Durham, Hillsborough, Chapel Hill, Pittsburgh,
the
Rocky.
Wow.
So it's an extraordinary, it was one of the first things I read when I moved here almost 30 years ago, and it just blew me away because it was such an invitation to understand natural history here and also history. And it was such an enthusiast's report, you know. So the true story is that John Lawson traveled with Eno Will for some time, and he tried to convert him to Christianity, and that's documented in his book. And Eno Will, in turn, gave him his son to have and raise in English ways and to convert to Christianity because he could not be Christian
himself. It was interesting in your And so you've taken on the voice of is it
the son of Enoel, yeah, and then Eno himself.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely willing to share their gods with John Lawson. John Lawson has this, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me," and he can't accept that gift of the blessings. He's perfectly willing to share the blessings of his God, but he can't accept the blessings of the gods of the
Indians. Which is interesting. I mean, that's kind of my take on what might have happened when the conversion, that might have been Enoel's side of it when the actual documented conversion attempt occurred. And because John Lawson was so open, he was like any newcomer to the South. He looked around him and he said, "My gosh, it's beautiful here, and the people are so friendly." And so I really started to see him, you know, the Native peoples, if you study Native culture, they were the basis for Southern hospitality. They had rules about hospitality. And so anyway, there are some theorists that have a lot to say about that. But for me, it's just a great story.
Well, how did you prepare yourself to get into the voice of a 1700s Indian, North Carolina Indian?
I read John Lawson's book.
But John Lawson's not an Indian.
Well, that's true. I was haunted by the story. And truthfully, I read Lawson's book one day, and it was the day that the first Gulf War started. And I was very worried about it. And, of course, there's a war at the conclusion of Lawson's life. And I saw how the great movements of people and the great destruction of this, the people of North Carolina, the first people here, had to do with war. And it all started to flow together in my mind. And I did one of those things that writers do. I turned to my computer, upset, inspired, haunted, and started to write. And around 7 o'clock that night, my husband called and said, "Where are you?" And I had not known what time it was.
So you were gotten into a trance, a trance.
I was.
You're writing in the Indian. I mean, the Indian has taken possession of you.
Yeah, sure. And I hope so.
Well, no, it's a great story. For those who don't know the John Lawson story, and there's no reason we wish that everybody would know that story, because it's just as you described it, a very important part of our culture and history.
Yeah.
But the sad thing is that this guy, who probably loved Indian culture more than most of the other Europeans who came here and understood them, tragically felt the pain of misunderstanding in a life-ending way, I guess.
Yeah, he was the first official victim in the Tuscarora War. So,
how did your Indian character deal with one of his fellow Indians torturing John Lawson and ending his life?
Yeah, I think he was very saddened. John Lawson was his adopted father, and you know what I was trying to get at was the complexity of when you come cross culture with love and with family. And it was ironic that Lawson's idea of how to jump over cultural differences was to marry each other and raise children together.
Well,
so when he did that in real life, of course, he had a survivor who was a son who I suppose loved him very much, who was Native American.
Well, this is just one of the great stories in Marjorie Hudson's new book of stories, Accidental Birds of the Carolinas, and we'll continue our discussion about those stories and about her writing after this short break.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Marjorie Hudson. Marjorie Hudson's our neighbor down in Chatham County and great writer, great teacher of writing, great promoter of other writers. And so, Marjorie, it's a great, wonderful event when your book is of stories is published. And I've read most of your stories, and I love everyone that I've read so far. Earlier we were talking about the title story, and I told you my perspective of this. Will you tell me your perspective of the accidental birds of the Carolinas and why birds are a part of all of this?
Why birds are a part of all this? Well, birds haunt my life. And, you know, sometimes you write and write and write, and all of a sudden you see a theme, and you decide to really go there. And an accidental bird is someone who's come is a bird who's come from some other place on migration and been blown off course by
a
storm.
A bird that you see and you get out your book and you can't find it.
And you can't figure it out.
And it just doesn't belong here.
Yeah.
And it's lost,
often,
sort of.
Yeah.
Often lost, maybe.
It's lost.
So an accident, but the birders, and I'm not one, but birders would call this an accidental bird, and it's in the wrong place, so it's here by accident.
That's right, and it's kind of
now,
a
what does that have to do
term
with,
of art. What does that have to do with the South? Well, I looked at my characters when I was putting this collection together, and one of them was clearly from somewhere else and was kind of blown off his course in life, and I realized that a lot of them were from somewhere else and ended up in my fictional county, Amboy County.
For those who join us late, most of these stories relate to people who live around us.
That's
and this
right.
story is, you're saying that this is an accident, a person who kind of is here, not born and raised, but kind of got here.
Ended up here. You know,
like a lot of us.
Like a lot of us, myself included. And I just began to see that was a theme in my writing. I mean, it just kind of goes back, the bridge between the newcomer and the native in the South. I have that bridge happening in my own family. I married a native of North Carolina. And so I've experienced that. You know, the great pleasure and also the kind of funny difficulties of making that transition. And turns out I was putting together a completely different story collection, and then I looked at what I had and I said, you know, there's a theme here. I think I should go with
it. Tell us about the accidental bird or the accidental person in your in this story.
Yeah.
Short story collections almost always have the title of the book is the title of one of the stories.
That's
and this
right.
is, I'm asking you to talk about your title story, I guess.
Yeah, okay. The story, Accidental Birds of the Carolinas. It's about a retired colonel in the Army named Randall Jefferson Lee, and he is not from North Carolina, but he has sort of some thin family history with the great general of the Civil War. And he retires south with his wife to a retirement community that seems sort of all too perfect. And his way of coping with that is going running every day. His wife falls absolutely in love with this retirement community. And it is has kind of funny little names, kind of historic names, of Anglophile names like Sir Walter Raleigh Road and Queen of Scots Way. And it's a little too pretty for him, and he's got some difficult things on his mind. He's worried about his health. He's found out that he has very kind of untreatable and very severe heart disease.
He's got heart disease. Excuse me for interrupting you, but
sure.
I identify with this character a lot.
Oh, gosh.
But he's got a heart that if he were younger and maybe situated differently, he might be able to get fixed up with a heart transplant, but
that's right.
He's kind of it's hard to accept, but he's so old and
he's just not a good candidate for that kind of for surgery, and so he has to accept that. And he has a friend who is also military that he's been running with, who's had that very sad situation happen in his life where his family tried to save him after a similar
He had a stroke or something and was basically vegetable.
And he's been kept alive.
So this is his best friend. He can't even talk to him.
Yeah, and he's just really utterly, as all of us are, appalled by this situation and terrified that it might happen to him. His wife is very tender-hearted. She would make sure he was rescued. And, of course, these days in medicine, you can be brought back to life, only stay not really alive for a long time. So he's thinking about this, and he decides he's going to run.
Yeah, now you take him. I have to just say that you take him on a long run, and yeah. I happened to read this story when I returned from a long run, and I'm older than this guy in the book, you know, so I'm thinking when I sit down, I'm thinking I'm never going to run again. I'm, you know, it's just crazy to do this. I'm going to have a heart attack. And then this guy, he's so worried about himself.
Yeah.
Now, will you tell us what happened?
Yeah. Well, he's very self-involved. He comes home from his long run, having gone
He's so worried
that he's going to die. He has it all planned out.
His wife, he just wants to go and get it over with.
Right.
And he's thinking about himself, sort of. He's thinking about his wife as well. He's not thinking about himself in the context of what problems it might be for him to live alone. Then he goes back home and what happens?
And then he sees his neighbor sitting there, and his neighbor kind of reaches out to him. And instead of his neighbor being drunk, which he accuses him of, he finds that he's been crying, and it becomes clear that his wife is the one who has collapsed and could not be resuscitated. So his life spins out from there in a very difficult way, and all of kind of his birds come home to roost, and he has to kind of live with and deal with his kind of internal dialogue about what his marriage was all about, what his life is all about, his relationship with his children, and how is he gonna keep going in his life. And that's kind of what the story comes to. I have to tell you, DG, I mean, I know it made you sad. I'm sorry. But this story, I got to the end of it. I worked on the end for a long, long time. And when I wrote the last line, finally, I started to cry, and I realized that I had gotten to the right place, and it still, you know, makes me a little sad every time I read it. But I love him. You know, he's such a mess.
Well, he's a widower now. You know, if something happens to your marriage, you can go after him if you like this heart attack old guy who shouldn't be running anymore.
You never know. He could come back in a different story. He's got a lot to work out.
No, I agree. I think he does. I think that you nailed, in this story, you nailed some of my contemporaries, and not the exact problems, but the situation that we find ourselves in as we sort of move towards the end of life, and then looking at married couples who are, whether they're in love or not, they are attached to each other and dependent on each other. And when one goes, it's really tough, and it's really probably harder on the man because he's so unexpected, and he doesn't realize how dependent he is on his wife for everything, social life, you know, managing things, cooking the dinner, all of these things go away, and life management is what.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, this is happening to my generation, my parents' generation, all around me.
Yeah, where did you find this story?
Gotten to the age.
Where did you see this?
Well, it's not based on life at all. It's one of those gifts. It was started in my head when I saw a man running on the road. He was retired. He was of military bearing, and this was probably 15 years ago. I was walking my dog, and he just had a look in his eye of utter devastation. And, you know, if you see something like that, it sticks with you. And I just, you know, there wasn't a chance to say hello or are you okay? What's wrong? He just went by with his, you know, military bearing, and he was hanging on. I said, okay, this character, this is something that's going to haunt me for a while. And it did.
So now you've imposed it on the rest of us. It's going to haunt me the rest of my life, too.
It will haunt you the rest of your life.
Great story. Just one of the great stories in Marjorie Hudson's new book, Accidental Birds of the Carolinas. We've been talking about the title story of that book. And she and I'll be right back to talk more about her book after this short break.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with DG Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is DG Martin. My guest is Marjorie Hudson. She's our Chatham County neighbor. You're really, are you more Pittsburgh or more Chapel Hill? Or are you just caught in between?
I'm in between, but I'm a member of the Right Turn Club. I tend to go to Pittsburgh when I go out to 15501 from my side of the road.
You go there for lunch, for get your hair done,
lunch, for work, for teaching, for meeting with people. I had an office there for years. When I worked for Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill, my freelance office was on the circle in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they didn't have room back in the day. There wasn't room in the office for a copy editor. So,
when your good friends who don't live either place say, all right, you're halfway in between, what's the difference? You just say the university between Pittsburgh and Chapel Hill. And put the university aside. And
Pittsburgh is a small town. It's a very small town. And I actually remember the first 8 years of my life living in a little tiny town in the northern part of Illinois. My dad was a small town preacher. We lived on the corner of Maple and Main, across from the county courthouse. And when I saw Pittsburgh, I just felt like I was home. You know? And when I see Carrboro, I feel like I'm in a neighborhood back in D.C. where I also grew up later. Mm-hmm. But when I see Pittsburgh,
so it's neighborhood versus small towns. They're real connective links in either place. And you see neighborhoods sort of in Chapel Hill, or maybe in Carrboro you see neighborhoods even more. Yeah. And in Pittsburgh you see a small town.
I do. And, you know, I think one of the things that really moved me when I moved here was that I knew I was a complete stranger. I had DC license plates front and back on my car. And out in the country, people would do this thing called throw up their hand and wave to me. And I was like, they don't know me. How come they're being so nice? You know, so I was just really, surprised and moved and felt so deeply welcomed by that. I can't even tell you. And there was something about that where the stranger is cherished. You know, most stories are about either a stranger comes to town or a man goes on a journey. I felt like a stranger had come to town, and I was on this, the welcome wagon was out. I was interested in Southern people. I was interested in rural people. My neighbors were farmers. My neighbors were downtown shopkeepers. My neighbors were, you know, the downtown cop at the coffee shop. There was something very warming to me about it, and it saved my life. You know, I was a city girl and I was really not too happy there, and I just was meant to be here.
Well, now in Chapel Hill, you walk down the street, not everybody speaks to you the way I'd like for them to. But in Pittsburgh, if I walk down the street in Pittsburgh, is everybody going to nod their head and tell me hello?
I can go. Well, you know, maybe not so much anymore, but if you lived there, they would, and you could go into any store and say, everybody say, hi, DT, how you doing? How's your kids? How's your dog?
Because I love it.
You know, and it's just really fun for me. I love that. It's a great support system, especially if you, I was a single woman when I first moved here, and that was really, kind of great to have that proximity, that neighbor friendliness. And then now that I'm married, I have that kind of dual connection. I feel like I'm a bridge between old-timers here and people that I meet, and then the newcomers, like folks in Farrington or people who are new to the area. In fact, a person who had lived here for a long time kind of talked me into moving here, a girlfriend. Uh-huh. And I just talked a girlfriend into moving to Farrington. So
so now you're the ambassador.
I'm the ambassador for
Chatham County. Well, let me tell you, I want to talk some more about your book. I love talking about that. And as you've explained earlier, the title of your book, Accidental Birds of the Carolinas, talks a little bit about accidental people like you who happen to land here.
Sure.
And for some it works, some it doesn't.
Yeah.
And then I read this story, which you call The High Life, and it's about carnival workers, sort of. And,
yes.
And but now I've got this connection because not last summer, the summer before last, my good friend Jamie May and I went down to the fair, the county fair in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
And so I met some of these characters that you describe but I didn't see you there.
I wasn't there.
Tell us about this story about accidental people who came to Carolina. with the fair. Yeah. How did you find out about fair workers?
Oh.
About carnival workers. Let me describe them that way.
Gosh, that's a little mysterious. I never worked in a circus or in a fair, but I used to just kind of hang out. And in my growing up years, I kind of traveled all over the place, and I met a lot of different kinds of people.
Did any one of these fair workers ever hit on you?
Once or twice.
Really? I mean, really?
You know, in fact, there's this great story about I had a church trip to the beach with my MYF, and I and my older girl chaperone, I was maybe 16, 15, went down the Midway in this little beach town, and we picked up a carny, and we brought him back. And
you picked up a what?
A guy who
works for the carnival.
Yeah. I mean, he was hitting on us, and we didn't know.
So you just grabbed
him. We didn't know what to
you.
Do with him, so we dragged him home to talk to the preacher.
You're going to get him saved.
Yeah,
you're going to get him.
They had a good time talking. But
you do know at least one carnival worker.
I have some kind of peripatetic lifestyle. Back in my youth, I hitchhiked cross country. I met a lot of different kinds of people.
Well,
I had a lot of adventures. But let me just tell you again, it's strange that you picked that story to talk about, because, again, it's from a man's point of view, and I was inspired.
You're going to have to tell us a little more about it, because I didn't set it up right. Tell us the story about the two guys.
There's a runaway boy who's ended up working in the carnival.
Pretty young guy. 15 or 16.
Yeah, and he's now turning 16, and his name is Dip, and his partner's name is Royal. And Royal is an alcoholic, and he's pretty crazy, and he's always seducing women on the Midway. And so he's really getting on Dip's nerves, and Dip is turning 16, and he has to think about, what does he want out of his life? Because the high life, which is what Royal calls it, isn't really working for him. And he sees a woman on the Midway, and he just kind of follows her, and then things happen. So I was inspired to write this at the state fair here in North Carolina. And I just kind of worked it. It was years ago. I love the state fair. I don't go much anymore. I also love the county fair in Pittsboro. And I love the kind of the guys who run the rides, who just kind of come
guys,
from
these
all
are
over.
Thin because they smoke. They're thin. They got tattoos. They're
wiry.
Rusty almost. Not the nicest, smoothest complexions.
Yeah.
And
Tattoos before tattoos were cool.
And they got a big, wrench that they have to use to get things in control. If you don't watch out, you don't want to make them mad, but when you get on a ride, because they'll take you for a spin.
They could speed it up or slow it down or mess it up. And I'm not an expert on this stuff, but I'm a close observer. And I saw a young man running a ride, and it was a ride very much like the one described in here, which is called the Alpine Flyer or the Slider. And he just was doing this jitterbug thing and this rap, and I just fell in love with him. And I thought, okay, what's his life like? Because he also had just an expression on his face like he wanted out of there, and he was in there, So he ends up in the South traveling with his ride, and having run away from, have been thrown out of his house by his father at a young age.
This is a great story.
Yeah, thank
you. Great story. Just in carnival life, the only unanswered question is, Royal is like this typical rough and ready guy, ugly, drunk, and yet he goes out and he finds all the girls. Is this the kind of man y'all are attracted to?
How does that happen anyway?
I don't know. But
no, not so much anymore. women know better now.
Oh, that's good. Well, we're visiting with Marjorie Hudson, talking about some of the stories in her wonderful new book, Accidental Birds of the Carolinas. She and I will be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Uh-huh. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and my guest is Marjorie Hudson, author of the new book, Accidental Birds of the Carolinas. It's a selection of short stories and a novella that you've packaged. Why don't you just break out the novella and sell it separately?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, I could have done that, but I liked it being in there because it, again, was on the theme of somebody moving to the South and really trying to make a home. A young woman from Nebraska who's got a Mennonite rural background ends up at UNC and connects with her English professor.
Oh, my golly.
You know, I really did make all this up. None of this happened to me. But she, her...
You protest too much.
Her professor, well, you know, I have a good imagination, I got to say.
I'm going to check this out. What was the professor's real name?
No, really, seriously. I just made him up. But he is partly inspired, the whole story is partly inspired by Jane Smiley's novella, Goodwill, in which there's a man who's a Vietnam vet, and he comes back and he's want to make a perfect world. And he's in love with his perfect world, and he creates a farm. It's kind of his Walden Pond, and his wife is all part of that, and he's in charge and in control. And he just kind of creates beauty wherever he goes, and of course it completely falls apart. That's going to happen anytime, and it's a real true tragedy. So there's an element of that in this story, in that there's a young couple. They kind of are going back to the land. They're creating a perfect world. And then, of course, life intrudes, and there are things about it that are not perfect.
This is also part of the theme of the Accidental Birds. These are people from away from Carolina or Chatham County. Or what's
That's
the
right.
name of the county?
Ambler County.
Ambler County.
Yeah.
Why is it Ambler? What does that have to do with Chatham?
You know, I mean, who knows where these things come from.
Right.
But I did have some thoughts about it. Ambler, partly because it's walking.
Oh,
people
I gotcha.
Are walking. And Ambler also because it sounds a little bit like amber. And there's something about being caught in time.
Oh,
about
well,
this for me.
I'm glad I got off track.
I've got all metaphorical
question.
On you.
But this is an accidental bird, and he's not coming here to start his farm. And is that right?
In this story, he actually is coming home. It's one of the characters who has roots in the fictional county. His family, it's his family farm. He's buying it off from his older relations, and he wants to create kind of a perfect world. And then he meets this young woman who just absolutely adores him. So it ends up that they have to deal with having a young son who's Down syndrome. And in a perfect world, you would know what to do about that, but they really don't. And so it becomes, as beautiful as this child is, they really kind of don't know what to do. And that it just is a kind of way of looking at paradise and seeing what happens when we're humid and when we're not. You know, when we're not perfect. There's also a lot in this story about Walden and about poetry and Emily Dickinson.
I
don't know if you know that Thoreau wrote poetry, but he did. And he also was always, you know, creating these perfect worlds for himself. I've read a couple biographies of him, and, you know, he kind of basically messed up everything he did. But
he's enticing all the rest of us into this idea of let's go out and live off the grid, on the land.
And truthfully, you know, I did that when I was younger. My first job out of high school is I went back to the land with Mother Earth News. I worked at Mother Earth News and, you know, ate rutabagas out of the garden six times a week. And, you know, it was just that was a whole kind of lifestyle that I aimed for, and is a little bit of what I've looked for in Chatham County.
So we can get to know you. We can get to know you by reading this novella, which is part of your book, Accidental Birds of the Carolinas. Marjorie, I'd love to talk some more about your book, but what am I going to say? You promote writing, you help other writers, you teach writing, and you're also part of writing groups where writers help each other. So what? And we're full. You know, a lot of these accidental birds here, who are listening to this program, want to be better writers. And give us a few tips about writing.
Gosh, well, one thing is, You have to do the writing part, you have to lose your self-consciousness about what your English teacher told you. I am a copy editor and editor professionally by trade for 30 years. I just try to set that aside when I write and make as many mistakes as I can. And that's what I tell my students.
Is just forget about doing it right the first time anyway. Or get your story on the...
Get your story down and see what hits you emotionally in the story. Because that's what a fiction story, and that's really what memoirs are all about as well. It's about human emotion exposed and, you know, delightful and tragic and in all its colors. So
you've written a beautiful book of short stories of beautiful situations and the experiences of different people. And when your students or your colleagues write in this vein, what do you tell them they have to make it a story rather than just sort of a here it is type thing, which isn't all that bad, even when it's not a story.
Yeah. But
what makes these wonderful descriptions of characters and people and their problems of stories?
Oh, gosh. There's so many elements. It's a little mysterious, but I guess it has to have characters who are worth caring about for some reason. And it also has to have things going wrong. And it's funny, I learned that from the great teacher Max Steele. I was fortunate to have him write me a letter about one of the stories that's in this collection.
Oh, wow.
It's called Home. When it was first published in Story Magazine, he was an editor there, and he wrote me a 12-page letter
good
on a 12-page
golly.
Story, which I took as a good sign that he cared enough to do that.
Wow.
And I learned also that it wasn't enough to make it beautiful. Things had to happen, and things had to happen that were difficult. So I learned a lot from that. And
so
it
has to be an engaging character, and then something difficult happens in that engaging, that you come to care about the character, then something happens that makes it difficult for this character, and then you resolve it, or do you leave it unresolved?
Well, it can go a lot of different ways, but it has to go far enough that recognize our own vulnerability, because all of us are walking around in our perfect lives. Things are going wrong for us all the time, and that's how we relate to fiction. So we're looking for people who have qualities that are like ours, whether they're superficial social qualities or emotional qualities or situations. What Stephen King, he has this great book on writing. He says, I don't make plots. I put people in situations. And indeed he does. Some of his situations are scary. But I'm dealing more in realistic fiction. But I'm interested in a lot of different kinds of writing. So my students, I should say, I'm teaching kind of freelance classes. And I have a class at Rosemary House Bed and Breakfast this summer. People can look it up through the Bed and Breakfast. And I teach at McIntyre's and at General Store Cafe. I have some ongoing long-term writing groups there, and also at the new creative writing program at the community college.
You got all this. We got MarjorieHudson.com is going to be your website. We're going to have a reference to that on our website if you forget it.
Yeah,
and would you
right.
have your list of opportunities that somebody who might want to explore the possibility of taking one of those courses, they can do that.
Yep, and I love it. We sit in some of these classes, we just sit and we write based on prompts and the things that come out. Some of these classes are prompt writing.
You give them something to write about, they write about. They don't have to make up something. You give them something to start out with.
Well, they start somewhere, but, I tell them you can write about the opposite thing or make up whatever you want. And people end up writing about what they want to write about, so...
Marjorie Hudson, thanks for this great book, Accidental Birds of the Carolinas. Thanks for going around. You're going around all over talking about this.
Yeah.
And as we said, you can find out about where Marjorie's reading or visiting about this book by checking out her webpage, MarjorieHudson.com. And we'll have a link to that on our website. And best of luck. You make me want to come be your student. So.
Thank you, DG. I hope you do.
Thanks to Marjorie for being our guest. Thanks all y'all for listening. This has been DG Martin. It's been Who's Talking, and I'll be right back here before you know it.